Hello, everybody. I'm Radio Johnny, and you are listening to Recovery Radio on KRFP 90.3 FM in Moscow, Pullman. Recovery Radio is recorded live at the Latah Recovery Center, located at 531 South Main Street in Moscow. You can contact the LRC by phone at 208-883-1045 or by email at latahrecoverycenter@gmail.com. You can find them on the web at latahrecoverycenter.org and on Facebook. Recovery Radio's purpose is to share with our community how addictions and behavioral health disorders affect us all and how we deal with them. We also share the personal stories of people in and around recovery, highlighting their experience, insight, and hope for continued recovery. And if you want to see the calendar, go to the LatahRecoveryCenter.org website and click on the tab at the top that says calendar, and you'll see all the really cool and fun events that go on here. And I'm going to skip over that because we got a ton of fun coming in here today. We have two guests in the studio. We have Charlisa Davis, who's been with us before, and Holly Call, who that's C-A-L-L, who is from the Disability Action Center here in Moscow. And I'm going to start out with Holly. Holly, welcome. And why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, how you wound up in the Moscow Pullman area, and what you're doing here at the Disability Action Center.
Sure. So I moved here in 2023, actually, went through some major life changes from Nampa, Idaho, and kind of the bravest thing I've ever done, I would say, because I moved to Pullman, Washington, sight unseen, meaning I had never visited the town. The only things I had to go on were some pictures on Google and, you know, a little bit of information about the area. And so I moved up to the Palouse with my two kids and started an entirely new life up here. And initially, I was actually a makeup artist for a little bit. I worked at Ulta. And then saw an ad for Disability Action Center and thought, you know, that sounds like a job I'd really love to have, and applied for it and got the position. And now currently working as an advocate in independent living. So we're a center for independent living, and I serve people with disabilities and help them with a variety of tasks that could be anything from goals in finding employment, housing. Sometimes people need peer support, which is something I think it'd be potentially great to talk about today. My disabilities center around psychological disabilities such as depression, anxiety. And so as a peer support, I do connect with people regarding those disabilities as well there.
Right, right. Peer-to-peer or what?
Coaching.
Peer-to-peer coaching. Is something that's familiar to me. I mean, it's what we do at the Latah Recovery Center. So, yeah, it's nice that they have the you know, the capacity to do that there as well. So, coolaroo. Charlisa, for people who have not heard you before, you have been on our show before. Why don't you fill them in a little bit on your story?
Well, hi, everybody. I'm Charlisa Davis, and I am an African-American woman living in the state of Idaho. That's a challenge in itself. And I have a diagnosis. I have several diagnoses, but the diagnoses do not have me. I rather for people to see me first as a person than to see that person walking down the street, oh, she's off, or she's special, or she's crazy, or she's, you know, a little slow. So that's my challenge to the community, is to see people first and allow people to have their own voice. So I wanted to give back to the community and share with the community that people are important and we are all unique in our own way. And that brings me to do my community outreach. And so what kind of brought me here to the Lake Tahoe Recovery Center is my passion to give back. I started off first in a different state of starting up the recovery center and being part of consumer, they called it back then, consumers, mm-hmm. of finding out, does recovery work? And my therapist chose a couple of people to give some advice to the state, and I was chosen as part of a team. And they said, well, let's try this out. And they listened to us and started up like Recovery Center. It's similar to like what AA and NA is about, mm-hmm. except for people with mental illness, we usually are charged a fee to get support.
Right.
And we should not be charged a fee. So that advocacy work started there, Johnny.
Oh, cool. Cool. And that's, are you referring to the LAMI program that you're involved with, the Latah Alliance on Mental Illness?
No, the LAMI is separate, but I'm referring to all programs related to people with living with mental illness. We are usually charged a fee. They have to right. look up our insurance. They got to make sure we're covered. And do we have a copay first in order to be seen, in order to get support?
Right, right. Well, I guess what I'm thinking is that LAMI is a free program mm-hmm. that does give group support to individuals. Like you said, similar to like what AA or NA does mm-hmm. or any of the Dash A's as far as community,
yes.
you know, a fellowship of people with a shared problem and a shared I won't say cure, but a shared solution for what's going on there. Well, that's great. Something we're going to talk about today that's kind of a big deal for the area and mental health awareness is this 5K mental health, the sharing our stories of wellness.
Yes, but Johnny, can I correct the LAMI situation?
Sure.
Latah Alliance on Mental Illness gives to the community in three different ways. Number one, it has an alliance house here in Moscow. So it's unique in its own way that it has an alliance house that houses up to six individuals
okay.
with mild to severe mental illness. Number two, it offers support to the community. We offer family support group that meets once a month, and that's in person. And that's held through Lee and Carol Burkett. So shout out to the family support group that is going strong. And then also the WRAP program. It's WRAP, it's Wellness Recovery Action Plan. This is peer-to-peer support. It's similar to what the recovery center here is doing, and that's called WRAP.
Okay.
And that has scripted wellness programs available to the community, and that's offered in person and on Zoom. And oh. The recovery center has information about that on their through their emails and their social media accounts. And then the third way that LAMI gives back is through EOC. Education, outreach, and resources. And this includes the 5K.
Okay. And let's talk about the 5K. It's going to be happening on April 12th, this coming Saturday. The meetup is, I believe, at the Friendship Square Park area down here on Main Street, close to 3rd. Actually, very close to... 4th. Anyway, and it also has a unique feature that you can do at your own pace during the month of May if you can't make that date. You guys want to talk about that a little bit? Holly?
Oh, sure. So One of the reasons that we are holding the event in April, and that's our kickoff event, so we'd like the community to think of it that way, a kickoff into the month of May, which is actually Mental Health Awareness Month. This is a very unique area with a lot of students and also a lot of events such as Ren Fair and other fun things going on in May. So we decided to have our kickoff in April. However, in May, we encourage community members to participate in the 5K walk on their own. They can track it on an app, they can just hand record it in a journal, but we really encourage people to take that step and help support us in solidarity by walking that 5K in May.
Thank you.
Yes, and also for the 5K, our theme this year is sharing our stories of wellness. So we asked in the community, the individuals that have an illness, family members, caregivers, loved ones, to participate in this event. So it is considered a family event, including our pets and furry family members, to come on out, bring the leashes if you can, and come on out and enjoy the moment. And we will be having a speaking event, and then shortly after, doing the walk. But you don't have to do the walk that day. Again, you can do it at your own pace and in your own way up to the end of May.
Fantastic. Let's see, what else about that do people want to know? I guess that covered it kind of
clearly.
Well,
I do have some things about the sharing our stories, because we have a theme.
Yes.
And how do people do that? What do people need to know when they come, and how do they participate in sharing our stories of wellness? What does that even look like? What do you think, Johnny, if I ask you to come and join us at the 5K on this Saturday at 10 o'clock?
No pressure.
No pressure. What do you do? How do you share your story? And that's to anybody here. Yeah. How do you share your story of wellness?
Well, In my program, we share our experience, strength, and hope, which is what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. So I would imagine I would emphasize the what it's like now, as opposed to back in the days when I was, struggling and in active addiction. And talk about the things I do today that are different than the way I live my life, out there with the wolves. So I would look at it that way. Am I close?
Absolutely. And what I see here with celebrities, I have pictures of Demi Lovato, maybe I'll say these names right, Lady Gaga, Ryan Reynolds, Justin Bieber, Tiger Woods, Beyonce, Emma Stone, Dwayne Johnson, and the list goes on and on and on. I have up to 300 people, celebrities, that have mental illness that came out and finally shared where they'd never done this before. They would never come out and say that they had a mental illness. They would just say, oh, well, I'm sick right now. I'm just going to take a what?
I think they call it often like a nervous breakdown, yeah. or like a wellness break or something,
Yeah.
They kind of disappear for a bit. You'll see that with celebrities.
Yeah.
I wanted to address Johnny as well. You mentioned, is there a right way to, I don't think there's any one way to express your story of wellness. I think it's unique to each person and their life story, So I think that was great.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree with you. And something you brought up, talking about the celebrities there. Holly and I were chatting before the show started. We were getting to know each other, and there's a good 40 years in between the two of us. And we're talking about
really?
How. Oh yeah, we're talking about how the stigma of mental illness mm-hmm. has changed.
Yes.
From like when my mother was in her active alcoholism, the doctor prescribed Valium to her, which is a benzodiazepine, to help combat the depression she was experiencing with the alcoholism. Unfortunately, that could have been deadly, because with an alcoholic, at least an alcoholic like me, if something makes me feel good, I want more of it. So if I'm drinking and taking benzos and they make me feel even better, that's just the perfect setup for an overdose. You know, so, but we were talking about how different it is now and how these, you know, your example of all these celebrities who have come out and admitted openly that they've suffered with different degrees of mental illnesses or addictions and whatnot, and they're not judged out of existence anymore. I mean, if you came out as, I mean, everybody in Hollywood knew that, like, Raymond Burr was a raging alcoholic, and that, you know, Jackie Gleason was also a really heavy drinker, probably alcoholic, I don't know. But it was, you know, because they were famous at the time, everybody just kind of looked the other way. But if you were an up-and-comer and you came out and said, oh, yeah, I suffer from depression, that would be the last anybody ever heard of you. Yeah. You know, you'd be back waiting tables at the Brown Derby hoping for, you know, somebody to discover you all over again. And now it just doesn't seem to be that way anymore, at least not to that degree. You know, would I walk in at for a job interview and say, hey, by the way, you know, I'm bipolar and I'm on medication for it. I don't think I would do that.
Yeah.
that could have some bad ramifications, you know. Fortunately, like for Miss Denise here, coming in with her history.
It was totally a part of getting the job, in fact.
Right.
Yeah. To be a person in recovery from substance use disorder was exactly what they were looking for here at the Laetal Recovery Center, for being a recovery coach, someone who has lived experience. And I think that for, you know, that and also people who struggle with mental health, that them being able to walk alongside of other people and share what's going on and be able to talk with people is as well very, very important.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely.
So that, you know, neither are doing things by themselves. I mean, to have it be something where it used to be, you know, you were kind of shunned or something like that, that's just isolating people, making things worse. And I'm so glad that things are different now. So
yeah,
glad.
Absolutely.
Would you be okay if I made a comment on that too?
Sure.
The way that I see things, I think they definitely have improved where the topic of mental health is in the public lexicon, I think. One of my things and concerns that I'm seeing as a person with lived experience is there is a lot of initial positive, like, outward-facing messaging. You know, we support people with mental illnesses, and, you know, we do have the Mental Health Awareness Month, and so you'll see some of these efforts. But in our private lives, I do think we still face stigma. I do think we still face the frustration and fear of disclosure. How much do I share? How's that going to affect this situation? Will it affect me getting this job? Will it affect this relationship? Will it affect this friendship? These things are still really prescient concerns that we have now that are related to having a mental illness. And one thing that I would like to convey today is the message and the sharing our stories is really relevant here, that you are the author of your own story and you have that power to define yourself, you know, still. And people will say, well, you know, I understand depression, but, you know, I'll give you an example. One time I took a call and it was a lady I talked to, and she was very unhappy because her daughter was in a support group, and she said, I don't want my daughter being with those people.
Mm.
She had no idea who she was talking to. It cut right into me that the attitude still existed out there. No way was I going to tell her, oh, well, I'm one of those people. Better stop talking to me. You don't know what you're going to catch, you know. But the attitude still floats around out there, and it really can affect how we see ourselves. So the big thing about this event is I want people to understand that no matter what you know, there's some substance abuse recovery, right? Well, there's mental health recovery. And I've been in mental health recovery for a long time. It doesn't mean I don't still get panic attacks or have, you know, down days, but it does mean that I keep trudging forward in my life and making an effort to be the best person I can be and to, you know, believe that I am capable of what I set my mind to. And so that's a big part of what we want to do is let you know, like, you are not defined by your diagnosis. Not at all. I love that Charlisa shared that. And I wholeheartedly want to put that out there and to make sure that the discussion stays out in the open, that we start to become more comfortable talking about it and not, you know, sometimes we can backslide, I think, in society as well, to make sure to keep that message out there that, again, we are not defined by our disabilities or by our mental health disabilities.
And that's why recovery centers are so important. That's why peer support groups are so important. And that's why I have the WRAP program here for the community right here in Moscow. But you can also join by Zoom. And the WRAP program teaches five key concepts. And those key concepts, the first one is hope. Having hope that you can do this and you don't have to do it alone. The second one is self-responsibility. So if people come to the recovery center or go into peer support group, that's telling yourself, okay, I can do this, but I'm not sure if I can do it alone. Well, then you have people, a team of people that will help you along the way so that you don't have to do it alone. So you started by, you know, yourself having that self-responsibility to take that first step, but allow others to support you and help you, right? And then the third one of key concepts is education. Mm-hmm. Education is important to know what's going on with you. What do I do? How do I do it? What to do next? And stuff like that. And then the fourth one is self-advocacy. Knowing how to continue in your wellness. And how do I advocate for myself when I'm with my healthcare provider, our primary doctor, psychologist, psychiatrist, any type of therapist, because it could be physical therapist or it could be a mental health therapist as well.
Sure.
And then the last one, number five, is support. Back with the self-responsibility is support. But to add on with support, you can't just use one person. You need several, okay? You need up to 3 to 5 people on your list, because not everyone is there for you at your time of need, so you go to the next person. But knowing that there's someone there that can help, just because that person's not there, please know you're still not alone in this. So thank you.
Yeah, Denise, you refer to a group of women that you work with. What do you call them? Accountability?
Yeah, they're my accountability ladies, and I meet with them each week. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's really helpful. And we eat. All three of us share what is going on in our lives and what we're working on. And then that gives each other permission to, you know, talk into that situation, especially if we see that some of the things that they've talked about maybe aren't going as well as, you know, we know that they had hoped. But also just have someone in your life, like actively in your life, that you talk to about all the things and that you trust. They're my safe people. And I'm just so grateful for them.
I love that. I actually have a best friend who, after I moved, we tried to make sure to schedule time every week to talk. So we have our talk days, as we call them. And it's really important. We check in at least, you know, we may not always be able to talk on the same day or even talk that week, but having that ability to check in with a friend and to know that you have that person and that time carved away is really, really special. And also, I think it means that, you know, as somebody in terms of mental illness, it can help somebody keep from sliding into social isolation or, you know, perhaps maybe with substance abuse recovery, it could help keep you, you know, on that track. So routine and social connection on a regular basis, I think, are super important for people. I just love that.
I absolutely agree.
Yeah, I probably have, I don't know, well over 500 contacts in my phone from, you know, 30 years in recovery. And if I were to do a mass text that just said help, the roads coming into Moscow would be just jammed.
Flooded people.
Because that's, you know, that fellowship, that, you know, common disease with a common solution. We have to do that for each other. You know, you hear the expression, we have to give it away to keep it. You know, so we have to be there. And one of the other really annoying things about AA is when somebody asks you something, like someone asks you to be a sponsor, or someone asks you to chair a meeting, or be a queue holder to open up a place, or the coffee maker, or whatever it is. Anytime someone asks you a question related to the program, the answer is always yes, even when it's no.
Yes,
you know, unless it threatens your life, then you can say no. But I haven't been asked, you know, to do anything heroic. Although making coffee can be a very delicate subject.
Yes. You might be somebody's hero that day if they need their good coffee.
And somebody's loathsome enemy. But anyway, something you said, Holly, backing up just a little bit, is you were talking about, you know, there's still a level of unacceptance, I'll say, out there. And, you know, I can remember when I took that online test you know, to see if you're depressed, right? It's not a WebMD or one of those things. And I took the test. I answered the questions honestly. And, you know, it digests it a little bit and then sends back a recommendation, you know, or whatever. And my recommendation literally was, you really should call the suicide hotline.
Oh, my goodness.
So I went to another site, took another test, and they're like, why aren't you calling the suicide hotline right now? So, I made the effort to, you know, get connected with a counselor, and I talked with my MD about it, and started doing some anti-depression medication, and then working with the counselor on some cognitive, or what they call it, talk therapy. And the people around me, I didn't necessarily share it with everybody I knew casually, but some of the people I knew closely, and they're like, oh, it's all in your head. And I'm like, yeah, that's where I'm broken. It is in my head. No, this is not a dodge to get some drugs that don't even make you feel better.
Yeah.
You know, this is really serious. And like I said, some of those people real close to me is like, oh, you don't need that. You'll be fine. And, you know, that level, you would think, you know, in this enlightened age, that people would have a kind of a different spin looking at that. But yeah, still, it's like, it's not so much stigmatized in the sense of that you're, you know, oh, you're not employable, or you're a weirdo or whatever, but because there's no outward necessary symptom, you know, oh, I thought you were just a real quiet person. No, I'm terrified of sharing. I'm terrified of talking to people. Why don't you ever come out with the group? You know, because I'm terrified of being with a group and being discovered, like when I was drinking, for being the fraud that I was at the time. And, you know, so even afterwards, and the good news is about that is that over time and doing the work to get better, including the drugs and the counseling, I got to a point where I thought, you know, maybe I can get off this drug now. And I talked to my doctor, I talked to the counselor, and they both agreed it would probably be okay. So I tapered off of the medication, and knowing what I know now about maintaining a healthy level of, you know, mental health, I don't need the drugs anymore.
Yeah.
And I'm working along fine. Does it mean there aren't times where, you know, things are bad and I, you know, start having, I wouldn't say suicidal ideation, but, you know, start behaving depressively, you know, and isolating and whatnot. Yeah, those things still happen, but now I have the tools to deal with it, you know.
So I have a question.
Sure.
To the public and to the team here. If you want to comment to the question out there, I'm gonna have two questions for the public and to the team here. Number one, are all people who are depressed suicidal? That's the first question. Denise, seemed like you have something to say about that.
I don't think so. I think there's a difference between being depressed and being suicidal, just as there's a difference between self-harming and being suicidal. They're different. They can be different things.
There's different kinds of depression too, and it manifests differently with people. There's a low level depression where people will just feel kind of down in the dumps and it's kind of blah. So that's one form of depression. I think it's like anhedonia, I believe that's how it's pronounced. And then, you know, of course, people think of depression and they think of just very, very severe symptoms, but it's on a continuum. I wanted to throw out there too, Johnny, because to piggyback off something you were saying, and I'd really like to cover that, is you mentioned your friend saying it's in your head. Like, just, you know, why, get over it, just smile, just positive attitude. That is really, really common with mental illness where, and I find this fascinating, where the solution is proposed as you just need an attitude adjustment. Which is kind of amazing because we do not say that if somebody is unable to walk, if somebody has cancer, we don't just say, well, you know, I think you just need an attitude adjustment and you'll be fine. There's this really interesting idea that mental illness, because we cannot see it, is kind of like ephemeral and floating and not something that's very tangible. And I don't think that's true. I just think that we don't fully understand all of the causes. There's also, you know, there's research into depression as being potentially related to inflammatory processes in the body. And that is a very physical thing. That is a very body thing. It's not something that's, you know, just a concept. It's a real thing that they can measure. And there's also, in my opinion, based on my work and based on my lived experiences, I think that mental illness is genetic, and I think you have a tendency, but I truly believe that your environment informs your wellness. So if you are not in a healthy environment, you cannot be healthy. I think it's very simple in that way. I think if you don't have access to proper nutrition, to good rest, to good, healthy social connection, to feeling positive about yourself and your place in the world and your abilities, you're not going to be well. I think it's a guarantee. So it's not necessarily like, oh, well, just put a smile on your face and you'll be just fine. Right. You know, we hear that a lot. And it's aggravating. It's so aggravating. People with mental illness are doing the best that they can given their circumstances. And I think the best thing I would say to people who don't understand it or who don't go through it or just perplexed, because I see what happens when people interact with us and they're just like, what? They don't understand. Just be patient. Your friend who might not feel like going out with you guys, you know, they're not feeling well. Try to at least maybe meet them in the middle. Hey, do you want to hang out? I can bring a movie over. Or, you know, oh, that's okay. Why don't we, you know, offer alternative solutions for the people that you care about. And, you know, try to understand that if they could push a button to get rid of this, in an instant they would.
And sometimes just asking, right, Hollyanna? Ask, what can I do?
Mm-hmm.
How can I help you? How can I support you?
I love
you?
That question. It makes me feel so validated and loved. It really does. You know, somebody's really caring and listening to you. And that's healing. Listening is healing. I think, Denise, with you, you know, as a peer support in your professional life yourself, I think you understand the power of listening to others.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Just allowing someone to have a space to be able to share what's going on and just asking some questions and asking maybe what kind of next steps or support they think they might need. But just allowing, no one needs to fix it. It's not about me fixing anything at all. I don't want people fixing me. But mm-hmm. it's about allowing someone to express what's going on. You know, that they can say it out loud and that someone listens and cares about what's going on.
Absolutely. I can't tell you how many people, and I still think I could learn to listen better. I feel like this is a lifelong endeavor. I feel like we all want to think about what we want to say next because we want to be impactful and we want to connect. I really think that's why we tend to do that. But I have learned so much more by listening than I have by speaking. And it's just a very powerful way to be present in there for people that I think is healing.
Absolutely. And I can kind of put a number to some things here. The suicide rate. The suicide rate in Idaho, and the source here is the National Center for Health Statistics.
Statistics, you got it.
Okay. The suicide rate in Idaho has increased by 43.2%. That's almost 50%. Mm-hmm. Has increased by 43.2% over the past 20 years in relation to the national percentage.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll share this with Johnny and Denise. I'll give them the graph.
That's
sheet.
Alarming.
That's yeah. way alarming. So we need to listen more. We need to give resources to our young people. We need to pay attention. We need to offer wellness tools to them and allow them to, hey, what's going on? Why do you want to end your life?
I actually think that really ties in with the increase in social isolation that people have been experiencing. So I think that's such a good point. I think that was great for you to point out because I do believe that we are becoming increasingly disconnected from one another, and that increased suicide rate is reflective of that. That's my belief.
Yeah.
What do you think's happening?
I believe that a lot of it may relate to the way young people right now, and I'm sure that number is probably has to do with 18 to 30-year-olds or 15 to 30-year-olds primarily. It's the land of social media. We don't meet each other face-to-face. It's through devices. You know, during the COVID, we were fortunate enough that a lot of AA groups went on to Zoom or other face-to-face kind of connections. And once we're able to meet face-to-face again, some people wanted to stay on that Zoom. And what was discovered was most of the people that wanted to stay on Zoom didn't really have a super strong commitment to their sobriety process. And they just wanted to hide behind the screen rather than, you know, come in, be around other people, and, you know, get that vibe that happens when you're around live people. You know, there were some, and there always probably will be Zoom meetings because, you know, if you're stuck up in Alaska somewhere in the middle of winter, you know, 6 months of darkness, and but you got a computer connection, yeah, you know, that might be your only option, but that's the exception, not the rule. And I say that because I believe it's important to be face to face with people. you can get spun up in anticipating what somebody means when they make a comment, you know, that's written down, or you know, the bullying that goes on. I mean, somebody's getting bullied, you know. I used to get stuffed into garbage cans till I, you know, finally figured out how to get out of that, get around that by being just a little bit tougher. But that was a long time ago. Now, somebody's whole social structure, and this especially happens with young women, is totally destroyed by, you know, somebody making comments online. And there are things that people, these same people, would not say face to face. You know, so, you know, as far as the suicide rate goes, yeah, it doesn't surprise me at all that it's rocketed it up. And like I said, it's not on that page that you had there, Charlisa, but I'd be willing to bet a month's paycheck here at LRC. How much do I get paid?
You're a volunteer, Johnny.
Oh, that's right.
That's right.
The best kind.
What happened? Oh, there we are.
The best kind, the volunteer. Yes.
So, but I would bet it's in those younger age groups, which tend to be overall the victims of it. I do know there's probably a significant amount of people who have come back from military service too that I'm sure is contributing to that, because now that we're basically not involved in any major conflicts right at the moment, you know, we're seeing the result from that.
Yeah.
And boy, talk about a group that's hard to reach out to. We've had two different people trying to do outreach to the veteran community, and we just can't seem to get traction, like some other programs that are strictly veteran run, veteran approved. So anyway, just making a long story short, you know, we're getting close to the end of the hour. Charlisa, do you have any final thoughts?
Yes, yes, and yes.
Well, of course you do.
Okay. So the next question to the public is, how would you share your story of wellness? So that's the theme of the 5K. Is how would you share your story? And what does that even look like? So if you register for the 5K, which you can find us on social media at our website.
DisabilityActionCenter.org?
Yes. Is that the web? It's DAC, so DACNW.org.
Okay.
We have some resources there. And then what's the LAMI webpage?
LAMIAdvocacy.org.
Okay.
And then also at the Lake Tahoe Recovery Center website,
right.
You can also register there, and through our many partners, which are Smart Transit, so many.
Lake Tahoe Alliance for Mental Health.
Yes.
Those are our main partners. We do have some great sponsorship from CHAZ and NIAC, so we have some local support here. As well. It's going to be a great, and ATVP.
Yes.
Thank you.
ATVP,
yep.
Yes. So the how. Mm-hmm. How do you stay well? And I want to give out some pointers to that. So one of the things that I do, and hopefully some other people can share, is hygiene. Getting up in the morning, getting your day started, and some hygiene. Next is looking at your daily maintenance plan. See what's on your calendar. See what you have to do. See what you can do for that day. Third, exercise, or see what type of exercise you can do and how you can function during that time, or see if you can get a friend to do some exercise with you. Eating healthy, drinking water, and deciding what is your eating plan for that day. You know, if you plan ahead, you'll do better. Also using natural products instead of organic or what you call
synthetic products.
Thank you. And then stay away from the chemical type of products. Try to go natural as possible. Another way to stay well is If you have a prayer life, if you got the spiritual life, that helps me. Another way, clean up. You know, you can start with not maybe the whole room, but a part of the room. That helps you stay well and mentally well. Other ways that you guys can jump in. Other ways that you can, what you can do is make your doctor's appointments.
That's such a big one.
Follow up. Make sure you stay informed about your diagnosis. Make sure you're going to your appointments. Make sure you're doing your lab work.
Advocate for yourself.
Thank you. Thank you. And if you look good, you probably will feel good.
Sure.
Yes. So these are ways that you can share your story of how you're going to stay well. Think about positive affirmations. You can do that in the mirror. You can tell yourself some positive affirmations. You don't have to wait for someone to tell you something nice about yourself. You can smile at yourself. Okay. Another thing is to forgive yourself.
That's major.
Okay. You don't have to hold on to guilt or shame. That's a whole different day.
That's a whole day of
that's another conversation with Johnny.
That's life changing. Those are life changing things. Yeah.
That's right. And you know what? We are at the end right now.
Thank you, Johnny.
Well, thank you, Charlisa. Thank you, Holly, for being here. Thank you, Denise,
absolutely,
for sitting in and pitching in.